that, and that is how many floor plans there are. There's more than what's in here. You're actually missing parcel 9, unfortunately.
Which we're photocopying today.
Are we still using it? So a whole parcel is actually missing of floor plans in your brochure here. So you will get those over the next, hopefully tomorrow we'll have them ready for you.
Or today, yeah.
Or today,
yeah. We've got 20 of them.
So today, the step that we're trying to do today is get Hank over. He's going to go through the model with you. He's going to do an overview with you of the site. He's going to walk you through some of the boarding here. And what he will do is then, after we've done all of that, history and things like that, he's going to take you over to the site. So you're actually going to walk around the site. We're not going into any of the buildings. Hi, guys.
That was disruptive.
We're not going to go into any of the individual buildings today, because as you can see by the schedule, I've got those individually for different days. On those days, the expert of that building is going to take you on the tour. So what they'll do is they'll take you into the building, give you an idea of construction, how many units are in the building. They'll take you on samplings of what's in the building. Again, you can't go through each unit. It will take too long, there's too many, and you actually won't retain it all. That's why you have your manuals. So, today I think Hank will speak. Hank has, again, instead of the 4 hours, given me only an hour and a half window here. So what we'll do is we'll take the first half hour and he will summarize all of this, and then they'll take you on a tour of the site. I'm not sure how long we have Kevin and Tracy for today.
I'm good till 2, that's it.
Myself too. So
okay.
I got to meet here too.
So unfortunately, I think today is going to be a real quick tour around the site, because I actually can't do it. I have to go on a separate tour of the site as well at 2. So again, it's going to be a little bit. We're just going to rush it a little bit. But having said that, in your manual here, you have so much information that will be great to take home and to read through. I've broken it down. If you look, there's architect information, just some Millennium Water facts on each of the parcels. As you go through, you've got all your floor plans, again, with the exception of parcel 9, which you will get. And at the end of your booklet, you have a sampling of the passport that's going to be handed out on May the 15th. So it just gives you an idea of what is actually being printed right now. It will be stamped as you're going through all the avenues of the world. There are these designer suites that are out there that I've looked at that are still in the process of being put together. But that's what the designers of the world, if you look up here, is. They'll get the passport, again, the sampling at the back. The front here, this is a really nice little tool. It is a bird's eye view of the whole development. A little breakdown, a little information on the back, but at the front here, this gives you addresses, and it just is, if you want to learn anything today, just take this and learn that, because that will really, really help you. And then we can go, you can match the addresses to the parcels. Anyway, that'll give you a real quick idea of what's going on today.
Where are we now, then? So this is Cook?
We are, if you look, yeah. We're approximately, if you look at this, I have to look at it this way, where this big garden area, or this big garden area is, or park area is, we're just to the south of it. Just off the second. Off the first and second. So you can see first there, we don't go up as far as second.
Is the plan when we're describing the buildings, are we describing this by parcel or by address? Address is confusing to me. To this day, I don't know what the address is.
And I don't either. So are we going to describe them as parcel? Yes, I think we should describe them as parcel. But again, what we have, if you look at, I'm not sure which page is on, if you look, I think 3 or 4 pages in, it takes you through parcel and address. So if you guys just want to learn that, you can even mark it on that sheet. 181 is parcel 2. 150 Athletes Way is parcel 3. So it'll just take you through the addresses. Yeah. And parcel 3 has 3 addresses. Parcel 10 has 3 different addresses. So once you get to know it, I will go through the addresses first, and then we'll break it up by parcel. Okay, so we'll start again. Hank is on a bit of a time frame today, so Hank's going to...
I've got an hour and a half or something like that, so I'll do a...
Do a little bit of a chat here about what we talked about, and then we'll go, maybe go to that model, go over the model, and then you can take them for a walk along the thing.
Great.
So, this is Hank Jasper. He's the expert, and...
We're not sure a lot.
He tells us he's the expert. We're not sure.
At all. That's the reality.
Yes, you did.
I am the general manager of development and construction for Millennium Development. So I have an ownership of two gentlemen, Peter and Sharon Malik, and together we operate our development company, all aspects of it, including Millennium Water, which is what you're all getting involved with now, I understand, which is great. It's nice. It's nice we've reached this point. This is 4 years of work to put what you see, what you're going to see here today, to put all this together. We just had a group here from Russia looking at our project that are going to do Sochi, and the same developer that's going to be developing Sochi. And he's got 36 months, and he's doing Olympic Village twice as big as this, and so plus he's doing an airport, a cruise ship facility, and an 800 room hotel. So I mean, he made me feel pretty good. You know? We actually had 4 years for this site. This site is 11 acres of land. It's basically about 1.5 million square feet. It's 8 different parcels. Including the community center, which makes a 9th parcel. It's 24 separate buildings. We'll see all those today. I think that everybody got a bit of an agenda here. So, so the land acquisition, how this came about was over time, the city of Vancouver assembled all these lands in Southeast False Creek. And historically, the lands were used from everything from shipbuilding. Actually, somebody brought up a statistic that's kind of interesting. There was more ships built in Southeast False Creek than any other place in Canada during the Second World War. So they built all sorts of ships. Boeing actually had their original float plane operations here in Southeast False Creek. There's been a building that still remains called the Salt Building. It was the originally Domtar, where they brought all the salt in. And in fact, even when we came on site, there were still piles under the building you see on site, the Salt Building. So barges could come right into that building. So this Canada Iron was on this site. So it was, in our world, it's called a brownfield site. But we took 11 acres of brownfield, and it was the largest remediation, reclamation project ever undertaken in the city of Vancouver. It was also the largest excavation project as well. So the city assembled all these lands. They've been planning for a number of years. They had planned, obviously, the north side of False Creek. The western edge of False Creek was done in the 70s and the 80s, and this was the last area to actually be developed. So they put together a proposal call. There was 10 proponents. We were invited. Those 10 proponents were shortlisted to 3. So it was Wall Financial, Concord, and ourselves. And so we started this proposal called Response in January 2006. We were awarded the project in March 2006, middle of March. And we included a price, which at the time was the highest price ever paid for developed land on a square foot basis in Canada. That was $193 a foot. And so we paid a big premium for the site simply because it was the last waterfront neighborhood in the city. The harbor is fully developed. Obviously, there's the North Shore and parts of that. But in the city of Vancouver, this is the actually the last of the true waterfront. You can call it waterfront. So we were successful in end of March, say, 2006. So in that period of time, we had to proceed to develop and zone the site, so we arranged for the zoning. We had to arrange for the design. The design was sort of prescriptive in that it described building heights and it described square footages, and we got other criteria. For instance, the LEED criteria, which if you're all familiar with that, it's leadership and energy and environmental design. So as we speak, this is now the most sustainable project on the planet. We've got LEED Gold and LEED Platinum buildings, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But we also have LEED neighborhoods. So those first two designations are the Canada Green Building Council. The last designation of LEED Platinum Neighborhood is the American Green Building Council. And so we were the first project in North America and to be awarded this and meet these standards. We were also recently awarded the Globe Sustainability Award for residential development for Canada. Now that was, I don't know if you followed that or not, but there was a Globe conference here with maybe 3,000 attendees. And we were awarded this the most sustainable community in Canada award. So, and I'll get into what that, why we received those awards in a second here. So we began the actual construction on site in January of 2007. That was the excavation. We began foundations in June and July. We basically don't have a plan here. Well, you got your plan. The plan in front of you. We basically began construction on the site from the First and Columbia corner, and went around the site from west to east. In hindsight, we should have done it east to west, but we did it west to east. And there were some reasons for that. It was the servicing had to be done. The servicing wasn't complete. On the east side, so we started on the western edge. But we worked through the site basically west to east. It ends up that parcel 9 and parcel 10 are the two largest parcels on the project. And you can see in terms of what's there, we have about 100,000 feet of total retail space with the salt building. So we have about 65,000 square feet of our own in parcels 5, 6, 9, and 10. Parcels 9 and 10, you can see that's the, we did a deal with Urban Fair that was difficult, but we got them in place. And London Drugs shows what can happen at a cocktail party. We actually did the London Drugs deal at a political cocktail party with the head of real estate of London Drugs. So over a couple of drinks, and they signed up, which was great. Fortunately, we just completed a couple other IGA stores with them, so they were prepared to listen. So construction started, and for the most part, most of the construction programs were about 24 months. So our deadline for the turnover to VanOck was basically November 1st of 2009. We turned over, and this was a condition of the development rights that we were granted. So we got the land for $193 million. They put all these other conditions on us, including LEED. Which is fine, a lot of design conditions, but the biggest single condition was turning over this project to VanOck for 5 months. I say it's like we gave them every hotel room in downtown Vancouver for free for 5 months. So that's what took place. VanOck, there was political issues that came up through the piece. There was concerns over would we complete it on time. The story coming out of that is we did complete it on time, and in fact we had the manager of the Olympic Village on a tour one day with all of the media there and everything. He proceeds to make the announcement that this was the first Olympic Village that was turned over 6 weeks in advance of an actual required date. So we spent millions getting this thing completed on time and dealing with all the criticism, but we did it. We stepped up, we performed, we did everything we said we were going to do. The adjoining areas, community plan, this Southeast Falls Creek is a master plan for not just this parcel. This parcel is called Parcel 2A, and we'll see on the larger model here, there's developments to occur between here and the Canby Street Bridge, and there's other developments occurring up to Main Street and in and around Main Street. So our population here, fully occupied between the rental, non-market, the market housing, we think it's going to be approaching 25 to 2,800 people. So 1,100 units. We have 750 market units, 110 rental units, and about 250 non-market units, which the city managed to create some controversy around, which is kind of unfortunate. But really, it was all their call. They chose what the number of units to build. They chose the design standards. They chose how much money they would spend. We actually constructed all of the non-market for the city at their cost and put a management fee. Unfortunately, we lowballed the management fee and didn't, you know, barely covered our cost of doing it. But for the most part, for the city with the people that made all these design decisions. So the controversy that you see around the social housing, whoever had this idea in the first place to put social housing into a waterfront community, I guess you got to go back in time and look at that. But in point of fact, that happened it's happened on the north side of False Creek. It happened in southeast False Creek. I don't know if you know this or not, but a lot of the housing on the way into Granville Island, for instance, is co-op housing and social housing. In fact, I talked to somebody the other day that they're still paying the same rent. I think it's increased maybe 10 or 15% that they were paying in 1977. So, you know, this is not something new that's happened in this city before. This has been, the idea is a socialization process. You actually have mixed income levels. This is not social housing so much as it's fixed against income. So there's two, three, four bedroom units, non-market housing units there. People have to have a certain income level, achieve a certain income level to be able to afford. So it's level of affordability. So if you get a lot of questions about things like that, I would just defer and say, listen, you know, it was a condition of the development. It's really the city's under, those areas are under the city's control. And, I don't know why somebody's looking at market housing would be asking about that, but they might be wondering, you know, are they going to be sold? Well, you can see what the city's doing. We've told them, in no uncertain terms, do not ever think of selling this, because we didn't develop all this and pay $193 a foot to have you turn around and sell non-market housing to compete with us. So it's not going to happen.
Hank, on the non-market, where the city's overseeing it, you're going to have to some non-profit.
Yes.
The question you and I was doing the tours with Bob on this Friday was, you know, if somebody wants to get involved in putting their name on the list, where do I go? Who do I call?
Vancouver Housing. Vancouver Housing Office, they manage all that, and they will have, I think on their website, Tracy, there's a website they can go to, and, you know, they go through an application process and review all that. Anyway, we're here to talk about our housing, which is the great news story. We just want to sort of give you a little bit of a background so you don't just have to shrug your shoulders. But, you know, it's nothing to do with the developer, with what you're marketing. It was all cities undertaking to do this, and all their choices. So, we sort of resent it when somebody suggests that somehow Millennium was involved in this process. We weren't.
Quick question for you about that. I was reading some articles in the paper that they said they're going
to sell. Don't read the paper.
The city was going to, you know, change some of that into market housing. Is that not?
Well, that's what I just said. This idea they have for life safety people, teachers, nurses, I think that's probably the way it's going to go, because they realize that they would have the other thing, of course, they're involved in is on the finance side. So effectively, they would be diminishing the value of their own security for their loans, right? So why would you do that? So I don't, you know, it might be, there's a lot of politics that goes on in City Hall. I definitely won't get into that, but, you know, people have a lot of comments looking to create controversy. But I think at the end of the day, they're probably going to go that route of half to be for emergency workers, and then the other half to follow their standard criteria for selection. Okay, what else is on the bonds list here? Millennium Development, you know a fair bit about us. The company was founded by Peter and Schramm's father in the late 1940s. Millennium has our associated parent company. We still have an office in Paris. A company is called Armico. It was the largest construction company in the Middle East, in Iran, but they worked throughout the Middle East. Mr. Malik Sr. is an engineer trained in Germany. He founded the company in the late, I think it was 1948. He was actually in engineering school in Berlin during the Second World War, which was, and he actually graduated the University of Berlin, so he's...
The building's gone, but...
The building may be gone, yeah. So they have a long history. In fact, talking about Olympics, they actually built all of the Olympic venues. Iran was planning on going after the Olympic Games in the late 1970s, before the Shah was deposed. And by the way, there was no political connections or family connections there that, you know, people sometimes assume that. Everybody left the country. I mean, they just turfed everybody out, basically. And there's a funny story. The family home of the Meleks was actually seized by the mullahs and or by the religious group. And even though they didn't take title, the Melek family still owns this home today, this very large home in Tehran. And they still pay taxes on it. And they've been occupied by the mullahs ever since. So the good news about that site, though, is that it's actually been developed with high-rise buildings all around it, so the site's become quite a bit more valuable. So it's worth paying the tax. Anyway, Peter and Shram came to North America, and they both graduated from one in business, one in engineering, from the University of Edinburgh, and they came. Initially, they went to Paris, then they both moved to North America in the early 80s. Peter to San Francisco, then moved north to Vancouver. Millennium started out as actually a construction company and built some things like the Victoria Airport, the Terry Fox Plaza that we've all been to before. We built that. But they realized contracting was a tough business, so they wanted to get into an even tougher business called development, so they did that. And they started out with smaller projects, but they actually did some fairly major things, and one of the major things we did, and I think, Bono, maybe you don't go that far back, but maybe actually you do, with City in the Park. We acquired the old Canada Glass.
I do.
Yes,
I do. Go that far back.
Yeah. It wasn't that far, but that was a 15-year development, about $1.1 million square feet, 10 different buildings. What Millennium Water would have been if we wouldn't have had the Olympics, right? You know, we had to develop Millennium Water was the, it's my understanding, it was the largest project ever undertaken all at once in Canada, in residential projects, in terms of that size, that number of units. I say that, you know, I'm trying.
It may be North America, I don't think.
Well, I can't think of any other 1,100 unit. I mean, you were with Concord, you did, I think, the 3,000 unit, but I mean, that's 7-8 years, right? And this across the way, I know, is 12 million square feet, but that was over 25 years, you know. Yeah. So this was a big undertaking. But City in the Park was a large project. We did a North Shore Winter Club project. I've been with them for 8 years, and we've averaged about four projects a year since the time I've been here. So an average of, say, you know, something about 1 million square feet a year. And either in production or actual delivery or actual sales. So we kind of ramped up, and Millennium Water sort of preoccupied us for about 3 years in there, but all of our other projects, we have four or five other major projects that are at various stages right now, and in fact they are going to be starting in these spring, fall of this year. And interesting enough, size-wise, that you combine all those projects, it's about 80% of the size of Millennium Water. So it's just Millennium Water was so concentrated, so focused, all within a 3-year window. So it's a great project. I mean, I counted it up. We had about 350 consultant work on this project. I'll show you on the model who was involved in the different stages. We issued security cards for everybody going on and off site. This was part of our security for the Olympics to make sure there was no problems during the Olympics or during the construction of the venue. And we actually issued 12,000 security passes. So that means 12,000 different workers had been through that site. It was, like I said before, it was the largest. We set a few records, like we set the record for most concrete poured in a week in Vancouver's history. It was the largest excavation that's ever occurred in Vancouver's history. So it was a bunch of firsts. And the best news of all is that we, in terms of the design, we created a community that somebody, it was interesting, this Russian gentleman went through the other day, they said, our project looks like it belongs in Europe. You wouldn't find a project like this in North America in terms of its scale and its density. It's all been, buildings have all been brought out to the street edge. We've opened up corridors to encourage people to use stairwells and interact with one another. There's courtyards on the insides of all these buildings because we didn't have landscape areas to build landscaped areas outside the building, so it's all been brought into the courtyard, and you see that today. Courtyards, I was just through on the weekend, actually, and the courtyards they're pretty amazing places. I mean, you see some of the through units that we've got that back onto these courtyards, and we even have sky gardens, you know, where with, again, planting around up in the air. So we've kind of taken things in and up. And, you know, the concept here, they looked at probably three or four different concepts for Millennium Water, but they decided to go with a more European feel and keep the development mid to, the highest building on the site is 13 stories. And a big part of that was consideration for the surrounding views and things in the South Vancouver area. They did look at the North Shore of False Creek, that concept of, you know, it's been kind of funny because around the world it's known as the Vancouver model, right? Point towers with landscaping at the base. Well, the world shows up to look at the Vancouver model and we give them a new model. So our new model is mid-high-rise to low-rise. And again, creating an environment where there's more interaction with people, with their homes, and then putting the shopping in the center of this environment, so people don't have to use their cars. Put in major food stores, major drugs, all the services and facilities, restaurants. And the idea here is that somebody could live here without a car very easily. Even though we do have co-op cars in each and every building, they're going to be managed. There'll be a phone number somebody could dial to say, "I want a co-op car for such and such a day." And you'll be able to have access to that car. And those are going to be located, I think they're on four or five different sites. We were going to buy one for each one parcel, but instead decided to make it a sort of a communal type situation that you can drive. I think we have 10 or 12 cars in that pool. So that, again, is encouraging people. You don't need to own a car. You know, you can take the ferry across the water. They're talking about this median you see on First Avenue. They need about $60 or $70 million to do it, but there is a trolley. That same trolley that ran from Granville Island, that's scheduled to go right down First Avenue here, around Science World, and connect to Waterfront Station. So that's about a $70 million bill. This median was designed to accommodate that, so they follow the track line that runs past Science World, you know, that spur in there. And so when that happens, you know. That's going to be great. You definitely won't need a car. When we were going back and forth during the Olympics over to GM Place and other stuff, from here to GM Place, it's a 15-minute walk. So walking to work is absolutely doable, you know. Sorry?
On the density, maybe just point out. Oh. The density and the massing was already decided. You didn't have much input.
Well, no, we didn't. The density was prescribed. We had to, you know, basically it was in what's called the official community plan. So what we did do with that, though, is we did pick up bonus density for design features, for things like opening up the stairwells, glazing the stairwells, opening up the corridors. And we did get somewhere around, I think it was almost about 0.5 of a density bonus for doing all that. Now, the trade-off there was we actually had to build that space, too, right? So, you know, the cost of building the space versus the extra density we got. The other win we did get here was we built 110 rental units. I was able to negotiate that, what we got that land for free. So in encouragement to put rental housing here, we were able to do that. So
what was the restriction for the rental? 20?
This one is 20, that's right.
So that the 110 units that Hank's talking about, they're owned by Millennium, and they are designated rental for the next 20 years, but market rent.
Yeah, market rent, and actually, they're very nice buildings, extremely nice buildings. Yeah. Okay, you want to walk through any questions on any of that stuff?
Just a quick one. The community center, has that been gifted back to the city as built by you?
We built it for them.
Yes.
We designed it. That's an interesting story. I'll show you on the model, but there's two sites that we wanted to create iconic buildings for. And it was parcel 4, which is the building right on the waterfront, and the community center. And what happened initially was the community center was supposed to be under the building on parcel 4. We couldn't make it work. We spent weeks and weeks trying to design a building that would accommodate the community center underneath. And where the community center is was going to be low-rise housing, about three-story, right on the waterfront. So finally, I actually made the suggestion to say, you know, this isn't working. We'll give you our site, and you give us all the parcel 4, and give us a little bit more density. So that's what they did. So we ended up with an Erickson building on parcel 4, and the community center is an Erickson building. But we designed it, we built it, all but all at the city's cost. So we never, in fact, owned the land, and we never paid for any part of that building. But it's a great community center. Yeah. It's open right now. It will be open, yeah.
I know your time is limited, and I'd rather have them spend more time on the site.
Okay, well, let's go. Yeah, we can go and look at the model quickly.
Do you
want to
do this one here?
Yeah. This is probably better to give everybody an overview. Are you, by the way, are you all part of the renting team?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. How many are you?
On this project, how many?
It's
18.
18
of them. 18. Great. Super. So this is what I was mentioning. This is Area 2A, as you see. The beauty of this is that we actually have parks. It's called the Hinge Park. It's fully developed. There was a school site in here, but that's been grassed over, and that's been left for future. It's not very likely. They're already having trouble filling the local school that they have already in the neighborhood. So this is a community park garden. Again, it's grassed over for right now. The development that will occur in the future will be these buildings. The building you're standing in, this site you're standing in, we actually own. And there's twin towers planned for here, about 275,000 feet. So this is a big project right here. It's on the master plan, so we're sitting about here. This site, as you can see, there's 9 different parcels. Parcel 4, parcel 2, 5, the SALT building, parcel 9. Parcel 10, parcel 6, parcel 3. So you can see what I was talking about. Brought everything in from the street, courtyards, roof courtyards. This is the large commercial plaza. The community center is here. So Urban Ferret is under this building. This building is quite interesting because it's the first net zero building in Canada. So it's a seniors housing project, actually the city built. We built for the city. But it means it's net zero is the CMHC designation that says the amount of energy that building consumes is equal to the amount of the energy we can create on the site. So it's basically to watch. The rest of the site is about, we've achieved 50% energy reduction. We've achieved 50% water reduction. All of these rooftop areas you see here have what are called stormwater collection. They all go into cisterns and located in the parkade. They're used for both toilet flushing, so there's a secondary line system that supplies this water back to use for toilet flushing during the wet months, and then it's stored for irrigation on site during the dry summer months. The rest of the leads, conditions, green roofs, 50% green roofs over the whole site. You'll see that when you go on site. We, in fact, did put these Olympic logos everywhere. They came out very well. Plaza area, the idea is, you know, create as much activity as possible in the plaza. You know, we're going to have outdoor seating there for the restaurants. This is Mark James is planning a brew pub here. So we want this to be, I'll keep using the example, we want it to be the anti-leg and boot square. We want to make sure this place works great. All those people that walk the seawall, that are on the seawall, we want them to have a place to go. Plus, we want a great place for our residents that they never have to leave home. We mentioned the co-op parking. We also have outlets for electric vehicles in all the buildings. You'll see out there, we've used, you'll see the outside of the building, these automated sunshades. Well, it's the first, largest project, I think it's the largest project in the world with sunshades. So what happens is, we have a capillary mat heating cooling system, we'll show you in there, a system we found in Europe that basically has cold water and hot water piping, capillary tubing rather, set in the ceiling. It lays on top of the drywall, and it's radiant, so it actually passes through the drywall, so it cools or heats everything in the room. It's not like forced air. It's a clean building. There's no filters involved. There's no noise involved, and so very environmentally friendly. Again, 50% energy reduction. People that have problems with dust and air movement. There is air movement in the suites, but not the huge volume of air that needs to be passed through a fan system. The other thing under LEED, another good point for you to remember, you should probably all get a copy of that. I don't know, is Devon here? Oh, you know, you go pass up that challenge series. I think that would be a good thing to have, or just have it available. Well, I think if we can get a couple more for you. All of the things I'm talking about are in this document that we prepared. The design manager we hired, a fellow by the name of Roger Bailey, documented all this, the whole development in this challenge series book. So it's pretty fascinating reading to be able to, and you can just pick out any one of these things I've been talking about and read more about it. Again, you can see these will be future phases of development, but the beauty of all these sites is these large park areas that will not be developed. Even Parcel 2, for instance, which on fronts on First Avenue, that all the views you see here, they're going to be there in perpetuity. There won't be any development occurring here. This park here is a little bit closer, but there's also amazing views from all these buildings as well. I'll take you physically around the site, but I think Yvonne's going to take you to the buildings after that. This is an interesting island here. Oh, by the way, the city did all of the foreshore development with seawalls. So the beauty of this project, we talked about City in the Park, one of our projects, and other major developments like this usually occur over a 10-year period. And the infrastructure is only brought on then. In fact, this infrastructure was all on the seawall was all completed a year before we completed the project. The city streets were all completed concurrently with us. So I like to say we're going to turn a switch on and we truly will have an instant community here, which is great. This island is an interesting story because when the city was doing all this, when they excavated this area here, they call it zero net loss for habitat. So they had to do something to recreate that. So they built this little island. This island's pretty interesting because this is the first time in 100 years they've actually found herring roe inside of Southeast Falls Creek. So the water quality has improved in Southeast Falls Creek to the point the herring have come back. What else to tell you about this place? The city streets, that's interesting. You all used to seeing curb and gutter on city streets, you know, where you see the water disappear into a drain. Well, you won't see that here because what we have here is basically water going crowned off of a slope on the street. It's exactly what they did in medieval England. You know, you'd have water crowning on a street, going down a curb and running out. So all the water is collected in both directions. The split is actually about here. Water flows this way into this creek, and water from here, all surface water goes into this creek. Even our storm water that we recycle goes back into, that doesn't go into the toilets flushing, is used and recharges these creeks and streams. That's another interesting thing is the heat for this project is coming from the local energy utility. It's actually been built under the Canby Street Bridge. And what they're doing, the city of Vancouver did, is they set up a local utility that distributes hot water in a loop all the way around this project. So the same way as you have water and sanitary sewer, there's also a hot water loop here. And each building takes its hot water off of that loop, uses it for domestic hot water. It's about 170 degrees. It's high temperature hot water. And then we have these heat exchangers that we actually bring it into the building and distribute it around the building. So, and again, that assists in the energy conservation. That 50% number, I don't know how many of your buyers are going to be interested in this stuff, but I think it's worthwhile pointing out that 50% energy saving, buildings constitute about 50% of the carbon footprint on the planet, right? So if all buildings achieve the same energy efficiency that we have here, it would be the same as removing all the cars and trucks and buses off the roads in terms of the world's carbon footprint. So if all new projects are developed in the same fashion, you know, we're making huge energy savings here. What else is on this list? I think that's about it. Any other questions while we're standing around the model here?
One question, if I may.
Sure.
What's a real easy way to describe sustainability? Everyone talks about it, everyone uses it.
Well, you know, there's a couple things in here on these boards, and that wherever that sustainability board, I thought it was quite good. I think it's this green one here. In fact, I think that's what it says. What is LEED? And that really goes on to describe what LEED and sustainability are about. So all these things, place to live and work, easy access, healthier homes, safer homes, a home and a community with enhanced views, more green space, pedestrian-friendly streets, vibrant street experiences, all of those things, cleaner, quieter place, energy savings, all of that. Okay. So sustainability is intended to leadership in energy and environmental design. So it's both sustainability is economic, environmental, and social sustainability. That's what it's about. So you live in a place where you're not spending hours away from your family commuting. You're living in a place that's energy efficient, and you're living in a place that creates a neighborhood and an environment where you'd like to, where you want to be.
Self-supporting,
correct, yeah. And I think if you take, there's actually a board over here that talks about sustainability too. And you can see our green wall, that was supposed to be our model for sustainability, give people this connection with what this project's all about. You know, I guess what's happened in the marketplace, and green has become a marketing tool, but I think we're one of the first projects that have actually stepped up and said, you know, we're not just going to say we're green, we are green. You know, this is the greenest, now probably the greenest project on the planet. Since we were given LEED, Platinum, Neighborhood by the American Green Building Council. There's no other measuring device around the world. Like Europe, they don't do this. North America is the first place, and we've been designated as that. So, Yvonne, do you want to head out on site?
Yeah, actually, that would be great. Why don't I just have Angela here to give them just a 2-minute chat?
Sure.
City delegates attend
presenting. I don't know who yet. Maybe the mayor, I'm not sure yet, but that's not information you want to... Just if people are asking, just tell them that there's a ceremony and the city's over there. Bob is doing a special breakfast for the purchasers at Millennium Water that morning as well. And that will take place before the ceremony. And after that, we are bringing several groups of media through, so CTV and the CTV, and through a couple of different suites I have as well. And Bob Daly will be speaking and doing a little sort of question and answer period for each of the suites. A couple of our, just so you know, the rest of the day is sort of family style, community place, market type event. Our participating vendors that have been confirmed include Starbucks, Vancouver Sun Province, Ziptrek, McDonald's, Parks Board, T-Bank, EC Hydro, Linden Drugs, Urban Fair, Tech Comico, and the Royal Canadian Mint. Those guys are actually bringing displays of the Olympic and Paralympic medals, so that'll be cool, cool opportunities. And also, we are getting around 35 to 40 past athletes to come in to do signings and photographs, and confirmed gold medalist athletes that are participating include Ashley McIver, Ski Cross 2010, Kyle Schufeld, Carol Young, I don't know how to pronounce these names, and Ben Rutledge.
Rutledge.
Okay, if that means anything to anybody. So there'll be entertainment, food, and Ryan is looking after all of that for everybody. So that's not what's happening on May 15th. So, you know, it's open to everybody, admission is free. So, you know, it's a family style event. If you guys want to come down, bring friends, you know, tell your friends about it, tell your family about it. The more people are here, we're trying to get as many people down there as we can to make the site look really busy on that day. So as for the suites themselves for Avenues of the World, we are producing a passport. You guys don't already know about this. Okay, so you guys have this in your manual. It talks about all the suites and all of the designers. There are 9 designers, and each one outfitting a different suite. So please note that there is a 10th suite. This is a suite that was given to Inform after this whole sort of marketing campaign was set, so it's not being advertised, but it will be open like a regular suite and they can go and see it. The grand prize draw for Avenues of the World is a package worth $20,000, and the package includes $5,000 to Inform, Living Switzer, and The Cross, as well as an additional $5,000 worth of design services to any of the other designers, participating designers. That's the grand prize. And there's also 10 chances to win, a chance to win one of 10 luxury commuters or European style bicycles. So that's why it goes hand in hand with the sustainability. So in order to win, they have to get their passport stamped at least 8 different suites, and this page rips out and they drop it into an entry box in the new Millennium Water Presentation Center. So what will happen is there will be a person standing, one of our staff standing at each suite that stamps the passport with you. Do you guys have a copy of this mailer? These mailers are being dropped to... These mailers are... We printed 775,000 of these mailers, and they're being dropped all over the lower mainland for the next
year.
So, I'm just basically talking about that.
Garbage bins.
Yeah,
definitely. Thank you. Thanks. How's it going?
So it's really, really important that we get as many people down to the site as possible on that day. We want to make it look like a really good success. And, you know, Bob kept saying, you know, 5,000 people, so we want to make sure that, you know, it looks busy that day. No, it's a big village, but, you know, bring friends, bring your family down. Let's try to get as many people down as possible. Do you guys have any questions?